sound any better?
No.
No. Alright, so you go first. I'll log on that way.
So, I want you to imagine, Mitch, that someone comes up to you and says, I hear your company uses the telephone.
This is
Tell
Mitch
me how
Joel.
You use the telephone.
Oh, sorry, the sorry. This is Seth Godin.
The fact is, every company uses the telephone. And no one says, well, we have a telephone marketing strategy. And no one says, we've figured out a better way to use the telephone. Because the telephone's ubiquitous. You just connect with people. You talk to people. You do something worth discussing on the phone, but the phone is irrelevant. Well, social media is the same thing. You know, when we started, social media was the pink giraffe. And if you have a pink giraffe and it's the only pink giraffe around, everyone wants to see your pink giraffe. But now that everyone has a pink giraffe, having a Twitter account isn't worth a thing, right? So what we need to do is ignore the existence of social media and get back to first principles, which Chris has written about for years. And first principles are do something worth talking about as opposed to come up with a clever way to use the new social media.
Yeah, do I sound less like a robot now?
Great.
Chris Brogan has fixed his problem.
No, in the Google world, I can't believe that
tech
Apple
problem.
Owns the platform here, but that's another fight for another matter. You nailed it on the head. Everything that's always bothered me is that, you know, no one ever asked Hemingway what kind of pencils he used. You know, it just seems like the weirdest thing, but people will come up to me. I mean, I just met, the mayor just brought this guy over to me in the little town where I live, and as the guy's shaking my hand, he goes, hi, I don't tweet. I said, I don't care if you don't tweet. It's better if you don't tweet. Who cares? You know, he was the head of housing in the town. I don't think he needs to tweet. But the you know, when we wrote Trust Agents, Julian Smith and I thought that we had this plan. Like, we were like, okay, there's this whole new channel, and you can totally run wild there, and it'll be great because no one's there. And everyone showed up and didn't really do it, you know, as Seth uses the term, first principles. And so then we had to go write another dumb book together because we said, okay, well, all right, well, everyone showed up. You blew that, but here's another way to look at it. And, you know, I think the beauty in Seth and I play a somewhat similar game. He just does it a lot better. And it's you really just keep pointing out this really obvious truth a bunch of times in a row, and you just keep hoping, come on, this time, grab it, run with it.
Chris, Seth talks about dealing with fear and trying to understand where that safety zone is in the Icarus deception.
This is Mitch Jackson speaking.
Suggestions for people based upon your experiences or maybe what you've watched Seth do over the years with dealing with that, finding out exactly where that safety zone is for you.
Well, so I put together, I've been working on this project called Brave Now, and the first part of what I did was something called Brave New Year. I was at a place where I told people that the opposite of bravery isn't fear. The opposite of bravery is surrender. And my point being is that fear is part of the system. And I love the way Seth writes about it, because Seth says, you know, okay, you're afraid, now what? Keep doing the work. Stephen Pressfield, in his book Gates of Fire, which is about the Battle of Thermopylae, which is the 300 Spartans versus the 10,000 or more Persians, is basically, he says the opposite of fear is work. Meaning, if you're King Leonidas, you know, you don't want to sit around and tell people, don't be afraid, you just make them work harder. His point was that don't give people mindsets, give them actions that will lead you to the mindset. And I think that's what, you know, what's missing. And very strongly what Seth's covering is this whole notion that it's almost like he's so much a better book packager than me, because I would have put Keep Calm and Carry On being torn off the side of the book because it's just so silly. I mean, George Orwell was never more right, is what I'm saying. Is, you know, what Seth has provided is a book to point out that, you know, the lies, the information, everything that's gotten us fat and round and sitting in a cubicle, it's time to kind of take the other pill in the Matrix language.
All
oh,
very
like
well
that.
Said, Chris.
I like
you know,
that.
I think that
I love reference to Orwell. It's always good to hear Orwell
that
mentioned.
Had with social media is that the early adopters, the ones who are the loudest, often find, as Levi Strauss did, that you succeed by selling accessories for explorers as opposed to exploring. And we don't need rivets and we don't need jeans. Everyone can figure out how to do this now. What we have to understand is that work used to involve physical labor, and now work involves emotional labor, And so if you're finding what you do easy,
and artistic,
then you are
labor.
Probably not doing it right.
Well, Seth and Chris,
artists, guys.
Spreecast follower Chris
Hard
Costello,
work is really sexy these days.
I'd like to invite all followers, if you'd like to ask questions, submit them in the boxes below us. We'll try to address them on the screen as appropriate. But she wants to know, you know, how do you create that connection that you're talking about with your audience? And how do you get over that safety net, that fear factor to create that, you know, that connection? Any suggestions, Seth?
Well, first, I think we have to break the question down. What does the word audience mean? If you grew up with Johnny Carson, you think that audience means everyone. And what I argued in We Are All Weird is that everyone is no longer. And you need to start by shunning the non-believers. You need to understand that, as Kevin Kelly has said, 1,000 true fans is plenty. And that means that when you read people dumping on Amanda Palmer for one reason or another, whether they're misogynist or not, that's okay because those people aren't her fans. And she has plenty of fans to do her art. Number two is, what does connection mean? Well, connection involves a level of vulnerability, that you don't get to be Miles Davis and play with your back to the room and say, I'm just going to do this, but you guys talk among yourselves. That what this non-electronic, new electronic medium means is that you need to go to the world and say, here, I made this. So on January 2nd, we're launching this in 220 cities so far, something called the Icarus Sessions. And the Icarus Sessions are 140 seconds, little riff on Twitter, 140 seconds where you stand up in front of people in your town and you don't sell them anything and you don't pitch them anything, but you say, here, I made this. This is what I was afraid of. This is what was hard. This is what didn't work. And then you sit down. And the act of standing up and presenting your art, your work, to the world starts connection. Whereas, you know, that's very different.
Oh, AJ Lynn would love this. AJ Lynn would love this.
People who want to sell you an 82-page long ebook for $149 with guaranteed step-by-step tips about how you can do X, Y, and Z. It's very different from people who are in this, you know, retweet cycle where they figure if they just put it up in the world fast enough, they'll win. It's the opposite. But this time, it's personal. And connection starts with personal.
Oh, yes, that's very good. I love that.
Seth, you know, I tell young trial lawyers, leave your notes on the table, stand up in front of a jury and speak from the heart. You're going to know it. It's going to come out and be more genuine. And Chris, thanks for coming on today. I really appreciate your support. And through social media, you and I have gotten to know each other, and it's really been a pleasure. And I look forward to sharing your information with my friends, and especially, just so you know this, with my kids. That's what it's all about, making the next generation better. So thanks, Chris. Appreciate it very much.
Well, well, thanks for having me on. Hey, so, good luck with everything.
Mitch,
the launch looks
Jackson
amazing.
Is there for the next
My friend
generation.
Rex Williams shot an unboxing video of that monster book, and it just got him so much, like, he goes, oh, if only I had known, it would have got so much traffic. But who doesn't want to see a 19-pound book opened up? That was nuts.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks. Nice surprise.
All right, thanks.
See you.
Bye now.
Bye, Chris. Take care. Seth, that's what's really cool about Spreecast is we can have conversations. And I've got a couple of other people that want to say hi. But let's go to your second book that's coming out, which I understand is I don't want to simplify it, but it's basically a coloring book for adults, and it's called V is for Vulnerable. Can you share with us what this book's all about and what made you want to write it?
No, I haven't heard
it's not
about
a coloring book
all.
Because Hugh McLeod has already colored the whole thing for you. And
okay, all right.
My friend Lisa doesn't like the word vulnerable because she has trouble spitting it out, but I can see it slows people.
That makes two of us.
Every person I've handed it to has read the whole thing while I was sitting there. And, you know, it was inspired by lots of people from Brené Brown all the way back to people like Zig. And what it argues, letter by letter by letter, is that art is hard. Art is lonely. Art is scary. Art exposes you to shame. And art is not painting, not drawing, it's not singing. Art is when a human being does personal work for the first time that connects with somebody else. So the second time that, you know, you paint Starry, Starry Night, it's not art, it's just paint by numbers. The second time you say, hello, can I help you? You're just a robot. But when you connect with somebody else and you expose yourself and you're vulnerable, that is the labor going forward. We haven't taught anyone that. We've taught them to listen to the boss. And we're not going to value listening to the boss because there's someone cheaper than you who will listen to me. Right? That this notion... Yeah, please, go ahead.
No, I'm sorry, there was a delay. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I believe you talk about 26 different principles of yours in this book. And can you share with us, maybe giving an example or two of how those principles come into play in this particular publication?
Yeah, I'm afraid I'm not disciplined enough to have principles. I just have 26 letters in the alphabet, like Zebek, which is X-E-B-E-C. You know, a Zebek is a three-masted schooner that's often, in the old days, inhabited by pirates. So I wrote a little riff about what piracy means today. R is for rhyme and remix and reuse and recycle, and I talk a little bit about that. One of my favorite ones is O, which, of course, stands for one buttock playing. And if you don't know what one buttock playing is, go Google Ben Zander and watch his TED Talk, and you'll have a fabulous 18 minutes.
One buttock playing. Okay,
so you also talk about worry. Worry is not preparation. And similar to being afraid, similar to dealing with fear, people many times have challenges with dealing with being worried about things. And can you share with us maybe just a little bit about what you talked about concerning the issue of being worried in this new book that's coming out at the end of this month?
Well, let's understand, Mitch, that if you're thinking of the world the way an industrialist does, you want it to be smooth and perfect and predictable, there's a lot to worry about. But I just hopefully made a little bit of the case that the industrial age is ending. And all of those things are bad things if you're an artist. If you're an artist, you don't want everything to be predictable and smooth and without error. So the stuff we used to worry about is stuff we actually need to look forward to. And so turning it all upside down is way more important than sort of scrawling a few small notes into the margin. And then the third book, I just got this in the mail today, is called What You're Going to Do with That Duck. And if I had a flat head, there we go.
There you go.
And I did publish, as Chris alluded to, a 19-pound, 800-page book with a 50-page index. And I offered it to the people who supported my Kickstarter months ago. I have to confess, when someone asks me for one now, I'm less than charitable, because if they didn't believe and trust in me then, I certainly can't give them my limited edition book now. But the people who did get in early, they got it. But I knew people would want a piece of it. It is the best post from my blog from the last 7 years, plus a couple of extra ebooks as a bonus. So it's 625 pages. It only weighs 2 pounds, so it's a lot easier to carry than the 19-pound one. And it's called What You're Going to Do with That Duck, because the first post that I talk about is this one, which is lots of people, and maybe even 71 people here today, are spending a lot of time getting their ducks in a row, which is fine. But the real question is, now that you got a duck, what you're going to do with it? Because getting your ducks in a row and perfecting the world around you isn't nearly as important as having a plan for what to do with that duck.
I'm going to stop the recording there. It's getting too late here to keep going. But the wonderful thing is that Mitch Jackson has got Miss Joel on. It's on Spreecast, and 3,842 people have viewed it so far. I hope it's going to be there tomorrow, and I'll come back to the rest of it. It's whole program is 34 minutes long, and for some weird method, I managed to miss the beginning of it this evening, or managed to miss all of it this evening, so I'll take it from there. Okay. Thought you might just like a little bit of it as a bit of a flavour. The idea of having those three guys on together at the same time appealed to me a lot. And certainly the bit I've heard really, you know, was well worth the tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed it. Good night.